The story which I told in barest outline form to the kids a few minutes ago was an Appalachian version of a story that has its roots in England or Europe. But this is a story that is widespread in almost all cultures of the world. The same story plot of three brothers, or at any rate more than one, who reject offers of help and end up in trouble, and the one brother, usually the youngest and least likely, who welcomes the stranger, accepts his offers of help, and wins the beautiful woman. That story is widespread throughout many, many cultures. This is an example of folk wisdom, not specifically religious, you notice. The story reminds us that when we open ourselves to the needs of other people, we find new strength and possibilities which surpass anything we thought possible. On the other hand, when we close our hearts and minds to people we don't know, we shut ourselves off from all sorts of possibilities, and we are left with only our own resources to face the demands of life. When we meet the stranger, particularly the unlikely, unexpected stranger, it may be nothing less than a new and larger life that may be opening before us. The same sort of thing happened to Abraham and Sarah one long ago day. They were living in southern Palestine, south of where Jerusalem is now, a place called Mamre. Long before this, Abraham had left his faraway home at the call of God and in response to a promise. He had been promised descendants, land, and to be a blessing to all peoples. Now Abraham, in the years that since he left his home, had prospered. He was fairly wealthy. He had cattle, he had servants, but he never had had a child by his favorite wife, Sarah. And he and Sarah were past the age when a child was to be expected. They were old, to put it bluntly. I can identify with that, yeah. The promise of many descendants seemed dead. Maybe God had changed God's mind. Abraham might be going to die wealthy, but it looked like he was going to die without a son from his favorite wife. And then one day, three strangers appear at Abraham's tent at midday. Abraham at once offers them rest and food. He takes the best he has of meat and bread, and by the standards of his day, Abraham's best was pretty good. As the strangers eat, suspicion begins to grow in Abraham that these are more than ordinary travelers. The suspicion is confirmed when one of them says, "I will come back next year and Sarah will have a son." Now in the tent, of course, Sarah is listening to the conversation. In their culture, the women did not eat with male guests. Now when she hears these words, she mutters under her breath, yeah. And she laughs. The thing is impossible. She knows the facts of life. She knows she's past childbearing age. So she's skeptical of the promise. But then she's dismayed to realize that the visitors have heard her laugh and know exactly what she's thinking. Now at this point, the writers of Genesis shift the focus of their narrative to a new subject, leaving Abraham and Sarah with simply this impossible promise. We have to look further ahead in the text, another chapter or two, to find out that in another year, Sarah, in fact, does hold her own son, for she has become the mother of Isaac. What seems impossible for humans becomes very possible on God's terms and in God's time. God brings new life where there is no hope. The future is opened up exactly when Abraham and Sarah don't know how there can be a future. And it all begins when Abraham gets up in the heat of the day to offer hospitality to three strangers. He does not know at that moment that new life is at his door, but he opens himself and his home to these people, and the future opens up before him in ways he would never imagine. And the same principle continues to work across the centuries. When people meet the stranger, the newcomer, the unlikely one, and open themselves to that person, the possibility exists that something new and creative and life-giving will happen. When people reject the unexpected, reject the stranger, they may be rejecting the very help and blessing they need. Years after Abraham, Jesus sends his closest disciples to proclaim his message of God's new order of life in the villages of the Jewish people. And he tells them to rely on the hospitality of those they are sent among. Don't take any money, he says to them. Stay with someone who will welcome you when you visit a town. If no one will welcome you, shake the dust of that town off your feet and leave. That town will be punished severely on the day of judgment. Now, it's easy for us to hear this last sentence of that as sort of a warning to us. Be hospitable to others, at least to other followers of Jesus, or God is going to get you for that. Now, I'm uncomfortable with that picture of God as a sort of divine scorekeeper who in the end administers a kind of an eye for an eye justice. But we don't have to interpret the passage that way. We can understand Jesus to be making an observation about how life is. Jesus is saying that women and men who close themselves to others, who refuse hospitality to strangers, close themselves to anything new, are simply saying that nothing beyond their own experience and their own strength is worth having. Such people close themselves to the new things, even if God is the one offering the newness. Life comes to the door, and they refuse to answer. If the final fate of people who are like this is to be missing out on the newness of life, they have brought a limited final fate on themselves. Nothing to blame, nobody to blame for it but themselves. From Abraham through Jesus, through the wisdom reflected in these ancient folk tales, the message runs consistently. When the stranger comes to your door, you are well advised to take the opportunity to open the door. But what about you and me? Have we taken this message coming from so many sources at heart? Or are we locked into, hold so tightly into our self-reliance and our set ways of seeing and doing that we remain closed to every opportunity for something new? Well, now, obviously, not everyone we meet is a messenger from God or even a bearer of new possibilities for us. We have to discern between those who offer us renewal and those who would lead us astray. This isn't always easy, and sometimes we'll make mistakes. But there are some principles that can help us determine when the person at our door offers help and when the person tends to lead to disaster. First idea or first hint, the person who comes bringing new life from God usually does not arrive in a stretch limousine preceded by a public relations staff. In our folk tale about Jack and in the story of Abraham, we note that the life-giving visitor There's a surprise in each case. Jack does not expect to meet an old man by the road in the forest. Abraham sees three totally unexpected travelers approaching his tent. The disciples Jesus sends out are certainly not announced in advance in the villages they're going to visit. People there see them simply as what they are, traveling peasants. But all of these bring help or renewal in greater or smaller ways to those who will receive them. In many ways, the life-giving visitor is not very impressive. The old man who meets Jack seems ragged and hungry. At first glance, there are no marks of greatness around Abraham's visitors. That only comes later. The traveling disciples of Jesus do not walk into the Jewish villages with halos around their heads. In fact, the stranger who comes before you with fanfare and loud promises is probably not a bringer of new life to you at all. May very well be seeking to line his own pockets at your expense. Usually the visitor who brings new life appears as a stranger. And all too often we don't like strangers. You know, our nation is once again in the midst of a debate over the role of immigrants in our society. You would think that anybody in our society, besides a full-blooded Native American, has some room to talk about immigrants. And the Native Americans have plenty of room to talk about immigrants. But we complain about them anyhow. Indeed, it is all too often a common tendency to fear the person who does not look, speak, act, and smell exactly like we do. Too many of our leaders trade on our fear of strangers, not to strengthen our nation and not to advance humanity, but to gain and keep power for themselves. Let me tell you that here in the Shenandoah Valley, we live in what can fairly be described as an island of homogeneity. Now that's a 25-cent expression, isn't it? An island of homogeneity. What it means is right around here, yes, in many of our communities, everybody does act, look, and smell pretty much alike. But next week, I'm going to go visit my son and his cell phone. And he lives in Alexandria. And when I get up there, I'm going to be surrounded by Japanese, Koreans, Latinos, Germans, Dutch, and goodness knows what other national or ethnic groups that I can't identify at first sight. And that is the way that we are going. We're one of the few places in the country where it's not the case. But it will be. The day when people like you and me could assume that we're in the majority in our society, that day is rapidly passing. We had better learn to live in a multicultural society, because that's where we're going to live. If we fear the stranger, we will fear more and more of the world around us every year. So often life comes to us in the person of the unexpected, unimpressive person who in some ways is different from us. If we keep to the doors of our hearts closed, if we reject this person and the offering that he or she would bring us, we diminish ourselves, close ourselves in, and that closed way leads only to death. On the other hand, if we open ourselves and our hearts to the people we meet, we may receive surprising gifts which will support and renew us on our journey of life. We may even discover, as Abraham did, that no less a gift than the life-giving presence of God himself is at hand. May God grant each of us and all of us the trust and confidence to open the door of our hearts when we meet the life-giving stranger on our road of life, wherever that may be. Amen and amen.